Hi everyone, we are kickstarting the new season of the SaaS Sessions podcast, and I thank all of you for your continued support. So thanks a lot for that. In this new episode for the new season, we are speaking with Luke Diaz. Luke is based in the Bay Area and he's passionate about building and leading high performance teams in customer success orgs to drive three business outcomes. One, accelerated product adoption. Number two, to drive quantifiable business impact for their customers. And number three, achieve best-in-class gross and net retention. So, and in this episode particularly, we'll deep dive into the third outcome with Luke, which is achieving best-in-class gross and net retention. So, hey, Luke, such a pleasure to have you on the show. I gave a very short intro about you, but would love to know from your side a little bit more about your journey into the SaaS ecosystem and what exactly are you currently doing at AppZen as their VP of Customer Success.
Sure, thanks. Thanks, Sunil. And before we jump in, I just want to say thanks for having me. I'm a huge fan of the show. I also want to say congratulations on your success of having one of the top podcasts in India. It's pretty impressive what you've accomplished, and I'm honored to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I guess a good place to start is from a career perspective. I actually started in finance. So I was in hedge funds, and that was the first half of my career. And then the second half of my career, over the last 12 years, I've been obsessed with this problem of how do you unlock value for customers at scale and drive business impact through the customer success function. Currently, I lead customer success at a company called AppZen. We're an AI solution for the finance function. So we automate a lot of travel and entertainment auditing and in those reports, and along with accounts payable. So trying to automate and streamline using machine learning to drive efficiency. Relatively new position. I've been here for 3-4 months and I've absolutely loved it. It's a new, you know, when you join a new role,
yeah,
a lot of questions. I'm very happy with the challenge set in front of us.
Nice. That's a really good, you know, segue for your career into like for starting in finance and then going into customer success. And given the topic of conversation today as well, right? Like how do you achieve best in class gross and net retention, which has, again, like, you know, has that roots back into finance, right? And that's like an important metric that a lot of companies that I've seen track. Like I was reading a report as well. They were talking about like they took like top 20, 30 public SaaS companies, and they were talking about the, like, you know, the net retention that they have. And it was like 110 to 112%, right? So that's like a very good retention to have. But again, like that's the average. So there were a lot of companies who are doing 130, 140 as well. And there were a few companies who are doing like 90 and close to 100 as well. So, right. So like, you know, would love to understand from like zero, right? Like getting to that retention point is great and it kind of helps the company win on a broader scale. But like, you know, thinking from ground zero, right? Like when you close a customer and like, you know, when it's handed to the customer success team, right? Right from that point to like, you know, getting to that 120% retention, like net retention is a long, long journey, right? So, and customer success definitely plays a huge role into this. So like, what do you think are some of the pointers where, you know, you see customer success help in achieving this kind of good gross and net retention?
It's a really good question to kind of invert. Like if you take the question, how do we drive best in class gross retention, which I define as around 95%. If you're above 90% gross retention, you're in a really elite field. If you're at 95%, I would consider that best in class. If we invert that question, you're really talking about solving churn. So how do we reduce churn to the absolute minimum? Right. I would actually take one step back, and before a deal's even closed, I have found that a lot of startups, and this is a little bit of a double-edged sword, but a lot of startups, even at their A and B round, haven't adequately defined their ideal customer profile. You're a startup, right? And this makes sense. You're trying to sell to everybody. But when you sell to everybody and you don't intentionally analyze, like, who is this built for? What problems does it solve most frequently and most consistently? I do find that when you expand your surface area, with the lack of a defined ICP, you are taking on, perhaps willingly, more risk than you might be otherwise thinking through. So I also caution a lot of startups I work with and invest in and advise for of like, have you defined your ideal customer profile? So that's more like step zero to me. But let's say you signed up a customer, you asked a great question. I think from the data I've seen in both my portfolio companies and companies I've worked for, about 40% of churn can be attributed to a failed onboarding. And a lot of times when you look at the numbers and you look at and you do root cause analysis, you're selling typically a software to an organization. They need to change something. There's like change management involved. Humans need to adopt a new way of doing things. There's the software experience itself, but how does that tie into like how they do their work? I call this like workflow integration. How do you tie your software's outputs to your customer's inputs and how they do their job? Right. So I feel like not having a defined, staged exit criteria-based onboarding is one of the biggest gaps I see in like companies that are pre, like call it A or B round. That's one high area of opportunity.
Got it. Yeah, basically, how do you onboard the customers and deliver that immediate set of value, right? As you said, what's the product output for the user's input, right? How are you solving their day-to-day challenges, right? It's as simple as like you log into your mailbox and you see your email right there and you just click it and you're able to read it. You know, it's very simple, right? Like obviously we've been using it for years and it's kind of imprinted in our muscle memory. So we don't feel that there is actually a team and, you know, think about 15, 20 years ago, like, would this even be possible, right? Like for them, think about something like this. How do you deliver that immediate value to the customer so that people start using it? They get instant gratification of using the product and also coming back to the product constantly so that they would explore more and more new use cases, right? So that's really important. But and you know, moving on to the next, like I would say, like in all of this sense, right? Like how you mentioned, right? Like churn is basically looking at my question in a reverse format where instead of improving your retention rates, how are you reducing churn, right? Which would in any way impact your retention rates. So I'm sure like there are other ways to impact your retention, gross and net retention as well, right? Either from what I've read through a lot of my research is like there are four ways. Obviously, one is you reduce churn. Second is you do cross-sell, sell more product to the new org or new function or sell new product line that you have to the same unit. Third is you upsell, like you sell more of the same licenses. Let's say earlier you have 10, now you're selling 20. And fourth is like you do volume, right? You play on volume. Maybe earlier they had like, you know, 100 GB of data usage and now you have like 200 GB of data. So I've seen like there are four ways you can impact retention, the gross and net retention, and which is basically getting more revenue from this customer, right? Like keeping it simple, like how do you make more money out of the same customer in all sense, right? So like, let's pick like each of these, as you said, these four pointers, right? So like, how do you reduce churn? That's one way, one insight that you already shared, like 40% is because of the onboarding, right? Like if you fail onboarding, 40% chance you're going to lose the customer in the next cycle, right? So what other insights do you have with respect to the next three, right? Like when you talk about upsell, cross-sell, and volume sell?
That's a great question. And I do caution founders when thinking about there's gross retention, right? And then there's net retention. Net retention is inclusive of gross retention. It's a net, that's the net number. And so I do caution some folks when you're thinking about optimizing for net retention, you can have phenomenal like expansion of your product. Maybe you have a phenomenal sales team. Maybe you've really dialed in the new go-to-market motion. But if you haven't solved gross retention, customers that sign up stay with you, net really good expansion can mask a gross retention problem. So I just want to make sure that we really put a bow on the gross retention piece because it's really the foundation of the revenue model. And like SaaS doesn't really work if you're retaining at 80% customers. The third thing that I'll just add quickly, besides lack of an ICP and lack of a defined onboarding, is when a customer does churn, that's super valuable, right? Like as a founder, alarm bells should be going off like, oh my goodness, we promised something somewhere, we went off the rails. And so what I've observed in a lot of startups is there is not a defined churn postmortem process. When I was hired as the first CSM at Optimizely, a company that I joined, it was my first tech job. I made sure that whenever a customer churned, which thankfully wasn't too frequently, we had all these defined 15 fields in Salesforce, very structured questions about why they left. And then that would trigger an email that went to the whole company. The whole company wasn't that big at the time. It was like 40, 50 people. But I wanted to make sure that churn and those learnings were not lost, swept under the rug, because it's painful. No one likes to, no one likes to lose a customer. So having a formal churn postmortem process is also super high impact. And then ideally you review that with the executive team on a quarterly basis, just so you're always on top of like, why are they churning? Is it the market? Is it competitive shift? Is it a lack of features? Is customer success not driving adoption? There's a lot of reasons, but that's just one other thing I'll add on the gross retention side. And then moving to the second half of your question, I do think of expansion similarly. You have like upsell, cross sell, and then there's a lot of different ways to think about that. The biggest thing for me, Sunil, is getting the incentives right. Like there are so many go-to-market teams where the CSMs and the AEs have very different compensation structures. A common one I've seen is customer success is entirely gross retention focused. And the sales team is almost always pure new business and expansion. And so they're operating in different worlds. What I found, which is really powerful, is aligning incentives. And this doesn't work 100% of the time. But at AppsFlow, we recently rolled out our comp plans where both CSMs and AEs have an incentive, a part of their variable driven by gross retention and driven by net retention. So it's the first time at the company that all of go-to-market is aligned on gross retention and net retention that literally determines their bonuses that we pay out quarterly. So I feel like incentives, to take the words of the late and great Charlie Munger, is like, you have to get the incentives right. Charlie Munger, as maybe a lot of your listeners know, he was big on psychology and he had these 25 psychological tendencies. He calls this one the reward punishment super response, but he basically says, hey, even if you appreciate the power of incentives, you're likely still underestimating how important it is. So I spent a lot of time on comp and making sure we get that right.
Nice. I would love to know, like, how did you structure your comp where your AEs also are focusing on gross retention? Like, I would love to double click on that. But, you know, before that, I would love to know, you mentioned about the churn postmortem process, right? So you had this 15 fields on Salesforce that whenever a customer churn, like either they get automatically filled through some survey or maybe your CSM is going and filling those fields. So what does that postmortem look like? And do you recall any of these fields that you had?
Yeah, the ones I've seen that worked the best, I've rolled it out a few times. I have not rolled it out at AppSend yet. I'm still in my third month. I plan to do so. The best ones I've seen are CSM led, but they're mostly showcasing and trying to capture, ideally in the customer's words, exactly why they're leaving. It's easy to create a field in Salesforce and say churn, product issues, like, but that doesn't really mean anything. But when you hear the customer say it, and I've done this two ways. One, I've quoted them and put that in our CRM. And the second way, which was much more powerful, if I notice a churn theme, a lot of folks are recording calls now through Gong or Chorus or one of these many tools, which I love, is you record the snippet of the churn conversation where the customer is telling you exactly why you failed them or why they, from their words. And then you play that video snippet for the CEO and maybe the whole leadership team, because sometimes they can be a little bit removed. It is such a visceral reaction to hear a customer telling you, like literally breaking up with you, and they hear it. I feel like that's more powerful than any Salesforce report. So I try and enrich the data with stories, as long as the stories I'm telling or the videos I'm sharing are representative of the theme. Right. So that was one way that I highly recommend sharing this information and not avoid the painful topic of churn.
Yeah. It's like literally getting a closure from your customer in some way. But coming to that, the current comp plan that you have, I don't know if you can share, but like, how did you make sure that your CSM teams and AE teams have, you know, alignment on the comp plan where you, they, both of them are focusing on gross and both of them are focusing on net retention. So how does that work?
So I'm really fortunate to have a chief revenue officer named David Shaw, who really is next level in how he thinks about team alignment. He wanted to make sure, as did I, that net retention was part of CSM's compensation. So from the get-go, I had really a strong partner in our CRO. He was recently promoted to CRO. He was VP of sales when I joined, and we were talking through this. The AEs operate, they sell to both new customers, like new business and existing. And so they have a number, just like any sales team. They're trying to sell X hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in a given quarter or year. So that's not unique. But they do have a portion of their variable that's driven by gross retention. And like, are the customers you're working with staying? Are you adequately spending time on customers that are having trouble? And they get rewarded for helping CS save a customer. Sometimes it comes down to really clever commercials, right? You can do a lot of clever things with usage, free add-ons, access to different parts of your product. You can get creative with the commercials. At AppZen, my team does not, we no longer own commercials. That's a task we've transitioned back to AEs. So we don't own contractual renewals, but customer success does own the value realization, the business reviews, health checks, making sure that customers are super successful. But when a time comes time to renewal, we work very closely with them, thanks to this tightly aligned comp plan, where both teams benefit from saving churn and both teams benefit from expansion. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's hard to get right, because you gotta make sure that the AEs are more focused on growth than retention. And you have to make sure that the CSMs and customer success are more focused on gross retention than net. Right. So it's almost like the inverse, but two sides of the same coin.
Right. That's interesting. And that's, I think a new way of doing things, at least from what I've heard. And, you know, earlier you mentioned about one, like when you were doing that postmortem, you mentioned that you, when you fill these questions or when you fill that, you know, the content that, you know, you're hearing from customers' problems in their own words, that's why, you know, they're breaking up with you and stop using your product. So basically focus on voice of the customer, right? And that brings me to my next point, focusing on voice of the customer after they have churned or when they are churning is great, but how can we use voice of the customer to avoid that situation to come up eventually?
That's a fantastic question, right? Because if you're recording churn conversations and it's the first time your executive team heard of it, you're clearly way too late.
Right.
My mind goes, and this depends on the nature of the product in the go-to-market motion of the company we're talking about. But if, to your point about upsells and like how important is usage to the value of the product, usage is pretty powerful, right? Like if you're not using the product, you're not going to get value from it. But how usage is tracked and measured, and if it's related to pricing, there's a lot of nuance there. Is the value metric or the usage metric you use aligned with value? So that's like, we could spend a whole podcast talking about that. But let's say that usage is important and it's aligned with the value your customer receives. Clearly, there's going to be some early warning systems or early warning signals in month three, in month six, month nine. We're in the process of re-architecting our health score, which is a combination of their level of engagement with us, literally their number of meetings, last business review, email response rates, stuff like that. So engagement is a big part of it. Product usage is a huge part of it. How much are they consuming? Is the product configured in the optimal way? Because we happen to have a product where you can use it a lot, but if it's not configured properly, you're not getting optimal value.
Mm.
So usage, product usage and engagement are the two biggest drivers of that.
Mm.
And if you have that in place, you have these early warning systems. Every week I send a report to our executive team and say, hey, we've identified, you know, call it 20 churn risks this fiscal year. Here's the exact reason why and the next steps and what we're doing about it. And so it's about the voice of the customer, but I'm trying to put it in terms of problems that we're trying to solve.
Right.
And making sure that the executive team we have a 9-person executive team, making sure that all of them see those risks, see the voice of the customer. Some of these renewals are 11 months out, right? We got plenty of time to right the ship. And that's on a weekly basis, we're updating that. So that's one way that I try and share the voice of the customer, mostly focusing on like where our customers not finding value in what we call a churn risk. So that's one way to approach it.
Nice. That's one thing you mentioned, very interesting, right? Like, you know, usage is interesting and an important factor to consider when you are taking voice of the customer, where, you know, they're not actually speaking with you, but you can obviously see from the analytics how they're using the product and the data talks to you, right? Like, how are they actually using? So what are some of the usage metrics that you generally track and see that is working? And the reason I ask is, like, I've implemented a bunch of tools across my career, and you know, I have definitely like churned a lot as well. Like I have said, hey, this is not working out, bye bye, and we are definitely not going to renew. And and the reason was never that we are not using the product, right? Like we use the product, like we have paid for it, so we use the product. So we were like you know, high on usage metrics for them. So probably, you know, the data that they saw, they felt like, hey, this is great. Like Sunil is using the product and there's no issue. But when the renewal conversation came, we were like, hey, you're not so happy and you want to move out, right? So like, how do you avoid these gaps, right? Like where data can tell one story for sure. It has its own ways of telling a story and how it's represented. But there's also how I'm perceiving it, right? Like I can see like Sunil was a great user. He was logging in daily, weekly, and using all the core products and everything. But at the end of renewal time, he churned. So why that happened? Yes. So how do you fix this gap particularly?
It's a fantastic question. Usage can certainly be misleading if that usage is not resulting in tangible value or like literally quantifiable ROI that justifies the investment in the first place.
Yeah.
Some of that has to do with the macro environment of like, what is the state of the world and economies when that's happening? I know you have a lot of listeners in India, but last week in the US, a big inflation report came out on Thursday, and it actually said inflation actually increased to 3.5% year over year, up from 3.2. Up until this point, everyone thought inflation was under control. You know, we did 11 rate hikes in a year and a half. I only mention that because the macroeconomic environment is so key to how your customers think about budgeting and spend. So that is all to say, I actually expect a rate hike in the US, which would be a really big deal. Not a lot of people are thinking about that, but kind of a contrarian in that view. What that means for me and other customer success practitioners is that this cost cutting, every dollar's being scrutinized, I actually think that's going to continue for another 12 to 18 months. So your question is even more valuable because there's plenty of high usage products out there, but are they driving business value? The key way I think about that is our fundamental customer success motion of our business review. So we have about 500 customers this quarter. Our fiscal started in February 1st. So we're almost done with, you know, February, March, April, coming up on the end of April. Today's April 15th. It's tax day in the US. So this quarter, my team has delivered 244 business reviews to our customers. They're recorded in Chorus. They're captured. That's my mechanism to know that we are not only relying on usage, but we're translating that usage into literal cost savings or efficiency gains for that economic buyer that's going to sign a check or a renewal form at some point this year. So the business review for us is super, super important. And that's the that's like the value communication mechanism so that we don't get caught in the trap of like, oh, usage is good. They must be healthy.
Right.
Have to have the, you have to have that value discussion and you have to make it very rigorous. You can't just, sometimes you can get away with emailing it. Sometimes you can get away with kind of having it built into your product on an analytics dashboard, but I don't think there's any good replacement for showcasing quantifiable ROI to the decision maker contract. Because keep in mind, they probably have 20 different spends, they have 20 different SaaS vendors, and they're going to get pressure from their CFO. Who are you going to cut? They're going to cut who they haven't heard from in a while, or who their team doesn't like, or where the value is questionable.
Makes sense. Makes sense. But I know I can talk on and on about this topic. And I know we have had conversations earlier and I feel you are also in the same side. But I know people generally start with why, but I kind of want to end the episode with why, right? Like why focus on gross and net retention overall, right? I know you answered that in a part where every dollar is going to get scrutinized in for the next 1 to 2 years. And that's going to rigorously come to each and every company out there, whether you're a good to have product or a must have product or whatever, right? Like if you're selling, you're in CS, this question would be tingling on all your investors, with your executives, your founders, everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So like why focus on gross and net retention in the end, right?
It's a good question. And there's kind of a philosophical angle, but if I were to make it super succinct, customer success can be expensive. On average, it's 10 to 20% of revenue is what you pay your customer success function. That's like non-trivial, right? And so I really love anchoring on gross and net retention because as a leader, I never want to be too far away from revenue. I've seen some customer success teams drift into the realm of like trainings and tickets and things that are not directly attributable to driving revenue. And I feel like that's always, almost always a path to smaller budgets, being viewed as a cost center and being marginalized, when really customer success as a key competitive advantage that should be well resourced and very tight to revenue. So it's more of a selfishly, I never want to be too far from revenue as a leader because I feel like that drives a lot of influence in budgets. So that's kind of the self-serving yet true to the function of why I think it's really, really important.
Nice. And I think like even I am like that. Like I like to be close to revenue. I like to own a revenue metric. Like you would not hear a lot of marketers at least would say that. So totally into that. But yeah, coming to the last section of the episode, Luke, I think this has been great. So the last section is like the lightning round. Like I have already asked you a lot of questions, but I'm going to ask you like three more. And again, not related to the topic that we were speaking earlier, but just in general, and you have to answer with whatever is on top of your mind. So what is the one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
Every weekend, I spend 2 hours on Khan Academy and just pure like deep work learning. And so that's been my mechanism for just like climbing up the learning curve as fast as I can, having dedicated deep work time. Were you referring to customer success specifically or just all learning?
No, curves? in general.
Oh yeah. Dedicated 2 hours of deep work. So you have learning time set aside for yourself. Treat yourself like a student.
Right. Always be learning, right? So on to the second one. So what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
I think what influenced me the most was a quote I heard from Frank Slootman, you know, former CEO of ServiceNow, former CEO of Snowflake, arguably one of the best CEOs in history. He said, we do not operate through title. We operate through influence. And that was one of the most empowering things I've ever heard. because whether I was a CSM or a manager, whatever my title was, I could influence the company by what I did. And that is your true power. It has nothing to do with title. We operate through influence, not title. And that's very empowering. And I wish I had known that when I was a CSM, when I first started. I think I didn't take enough risk. Yeah, or speak up loud enough.
Now that you say it, like, I wish I would have known that when I first started with whatever. But it's really interesting take. And then the last one, right? Like, what did your biggest professional failure teach you?
Two come to mind. The most succinct one is I've made a few hiring mistakes where I unfortunately had to manage them out or terminate them within three months. I missed some things during the interview process that I've since, the customer success, we're all people, a lot of people, like we like talking. There's like an element of relationships and rapport. And it's easy to be swayed by that likability factor and overlook critical skill sets that are needed to do customer success effectively in today's world. So hiring mistakes are one of the biggest, thankfully I've only made a few of them, but that has informed and improved my hiring process, taught myself to almost like de-bias myself on the relationship, likability, that element, and dive deeper into the hard skills of like, can they do SQL queries? Can they work with big data sets? Can they tell a data-driven story? How do they navigate failure? Like a lot of the things I should have been indexing on, I was not indexing enough. So that's a big one for me.
Yeah. No, I think like I've spoken to a lot of founders on the show, and like I've seen this being very, very common with a lot of founders when they are making their early hires, and this is very common, but it always teaches. I feel it always, like, there's a lot of learning there. So, but yeah, thanks again. Thanks, Luke. You shared a lot of insights on like achieving best in class cross and net retention from a customer success point of view. And I'm sure like these are very, very insightful points that a lot of people now that the dollar is getting scrutinized would focus on. If not now, then maybe eventually after listening to this episode, I guess. So again, thanks for sharing all these insights and taking time and coming on the show.
Yeah. You just, when we spoke a while ago, you recommended a book to me called
Creative Selection.
Creative Selection by Ken Kosienda. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for that recommendation. I'm like halfway through. It's a phenomenal book,
nice.
The Design Process at Apple with Steve Jobs. I mean, thank you so much for that recommendation.
Yeah.
We also talked briefly about net promoter systems, and like a lot of companies have NPS, but we didn't really talk too much about net expansion. But one thing I've noticed is companies, like, they have some sort of NPS program, but then the question is like, would you recommend this to a friend or colleague? But they never ask, a lot of customers or companies don't ask the promoters, hey, who else do you know that could benefit from Sunil's product? So another like low hanging fruit for expansion is like literally asking promoters for them to refer people.
Right.
It's 90% of the time, no one does it. They just track it. Yes. But anyway, I really had an enjoyable conversation with you. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Amazing. It's my pleasure to have you, Luke. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Talk soon.